بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وقد مكروا مكرهم إن الله مكرهم وإن كان مكرهم لتزول منه الجبال Mighty indeed were the plots which they made, but their plots were well within the sight of Allah, even though they were such as to shake the hills. This is one of our favorite ayats for over 30 years because it describes the conditions under which we were living when we first understood the ayat. And it seems as though our generation and transgeneration into the next few generations will live under this until Islam has such a sway, whether physical or psychological or emotional, over the people until there's willing friendship and cooperation with Islam and Muslims. But this is talking about the situation, and it says, mighty indeed were the plots which they made. We all understand those plots. And these plots would be so gigantic, so sophisticated, so well organized by their intent and implementation that if the mountains, al-jibalu, or the hills had aql, had reason, had the ability to think, it would cause them to tremble. So this is what the ayat is saying, the plots and schemes, and this is dealing with you and I today, will be so high and so sophisticated, right? So some of them well operationalized that if the mountains understood it, it would cause them to tremble. The other ayat behind it says, never think that Allah will fail His messenger and His promise. For Allah is exalted in power, Lord of retribution. So then it goes on to let us know, there's other ayahs in Quran, says, وَمَكْرُ وَمَكْرُ اللَّهُ لَهُ خَيْرُ الْمَكْرِينَ. They plan and Allah plans, and Allah is the best of planners. So today, we want to deal with some of the environmental circumstances under which we have been living and may continue for a while. If you'll permit me, I'd like to read two short articles. One is Provoking Actions. And this is an article. This one was from the Los Angeles Times research back in 2002. It has revealed, the Los Angeles Times has revealed the creation of an organization by U.S. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld called the Provocative Preemptive Operations Group. Its purpose is to bring together CIA and military covert actions, information, warfare, intelligence, and cover and deceptions. The PPOG's role is to manufacture the terrorism that is to be combated. Now, this is what they say several years ago, that the job of this organization is to continue in the long historical character of the United States government. It is to manufacture terrorism that is to be combated. But that's its job. We see it every day, all the time. The justification for the global war on Islam is all of these Pakistani bomber of the day, Negro bomber of the day, the underwear bomber, the shoe bomber, right? Probably pretty soon they'll have zillions of new creative bombers that they have created, right? That will justify searching us, searching our property, even imprisoning you or whatever they'd like to do. Why? Because they've set you up from the beginning. Faced with the massive opposition to their war plans, Bush and his team may again be planning some terrorist act
to provoke massive revulsion and whip up a skeptical and reluctant world into supporting war against Iraq and other targets. So you could easily see that not only do we understand this, but this is from their people, their organizations who do this research. And this is their feeling. And they say that since there's a reluctant public, people is tired of these people sending their kids off to war. You think they give us fitna? I started feeling sorry for the Americans a while ago. Not to change the subject, but you see on the news all the time, all of these veterans come home with an arm blown off, a leg blown off, half of their head blown off. And see, in years past, in Vietnam and Korea, those wars, medicine was at a pretty good level, but now, quick evacuation by helicopters, pumping you full of this, blowing you up full of that, can keep you alive now. But all of your limbs are blown off. And then when these guys go to the hospital or the Veterans Administration, and they have many situations in the newspaper, and the guys are saying, well, I need 100% benefits, and my thinking is gone, and I can't. Here's a guy, one guy had one arm blown off and one leg blown off, and half of his head, you know, indentated, and had a patch over his eye. So the doctor is saying, well, we can't give you these benefits because you have to prove that you're disabled. The guy is sitting there, and then the guy just starts crying because he's went over there following what they told him, right? You see it every day on TV. Or you see the people come back that's been ran crazy by the environment over there, right? And then they come back here and they said, well, you don't have a real problem because you just take some aspirins or something. You're imagining these psychological problems. And so I said, they do that to their people that they sent over there to get killed. The little fitna, the government agents and stuff that they cause for us is nothing. I said, they treat us better than they do their own people. We just have FBI and all of that fitna. I said, that ain't nothing. I mean, I really said this in Kutbah, and I meant it. I said, they're treating us better than they treat their own people. And you see every day, just 2 days ago, they just voted yesterday about the firemen, so-called first responders, going to World Trade Center. The news was saying no good deed will go unpunished. In other words, these people had cancer from the dust and everything, and they were saying, well, we up until yesterday, they wasn't going to give them any help, any aid, or any support. And those are the people that had put their life on the line. So what they do to us, back to the provoking actions. Chris Floyd's Counterpunch writes, the U.S. government is planning to use cover and deception and secret military operations to provoke murderous terrorist attacks on innocent people. Such operations are not new for the United States authorities. Operation Northwoods was such a scheme. It was a plan put forward by America's top military brass in 1963 to justify the invasion of Cuba. It called for a phony terrorist campaign complete with bombings, hijacking, plane crashes, and dead Americans to provide justification for an invasion of Cuba. President John F. Kennedy rejected the plan and was assassinated a few months later. Y'all saw maybe the movie JFK, and all in the background it was the U.S. military behind a lot of this stuff. The U.S. military wanted to do these phony World Trade Center type thing, Operation Norwood, in 1963 to justify the invasion of Cuba. They had the Bay of Pigs in 1961, and it failed. They had cigar bombs and everything for Fidel Castro. Fidel Castro is still alive today. All of those people that tried to kill him have been dead for 50 years. Can you imagine Fidel is still getting around? Fidel came to power in 1959. Good God Almighty. Right, there's only a few of us that was born in those days. Think about it. And they was trying to kill him, and he's still walking around, and all of them has been dead for 30, 40, even 50 years ago these bums died. Okay. Many believe that the events of September 11 were another such provocation using a terrorist organization infiltrated by the CIA and under its effective control. Now get what they say. The World Trade Center was a provocation using terrorist organizations infiltrated by the CIA and under its control. That's why we say 95% of the fitna that develops on the TV and everywhere, they do it to justify what they want to do. Because none of the people we know even think about terrorism against the United States. In fact, we don't even say Marg Bag Amrika anymore. You know why? It's already dead. I told the brothers at the Daftar years ago, I said, you might as well stop saying Marg Bag Amrika. The economy is dead. The military power is dead. They just fired the 23,000 teachers in California. The next year, 16,000. I said, every state that you're from and every city is broke. Isn't that right? All of them. I said, the U.S. is already dead. There's no sense using up your energy, plus nobody wants to say it anyway, talking about Marg Bag Amrika. America is dead, and the whole world knows it, believers. Don't worry about America. It is being punished for its bad behavior. Anyway, there is no other logical explanation for the complete failure of the interception of the hijacked planes that crashed into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. That means that the U.S., since I was a kid, they had NORAD, they had SAC, Strategic Air Command. They have had, if you sent up a kite and it didn't have a flight plan, they would shoot it down. They would shoot it down. So how could planes go out for 1 hour from Boston, change their idea, and go back all the way to New York? They would have shot it down the minute it gets off of its flight path. They radio, they say, hey, what's happening with y'all? If they don't answer, it'd be like the guy that went to sleep on his plane or something, or he got, and it was on automatic pilot, and the plane just flew and flew. It was a private jet until it crashed. But it was two jets that was right along with it all the way. Soon as they didn't get an answer, soon as they didn't respond, they scrambled the jets. And they followed it until it finally ran out of petrol and crashed. How could you fly from Dulles Airport going the other way and turn around and head toward Washington, D.C.? The only way they could do that is if they disable their security mechanism, which is such on a high level that it would have to be the Americans themselves or the Israelis telling them to do it. This is what the white Americans say, not us. They say, hey, there's no explanation for these planes crashing into the World Trade Center unless somebody, them, that's the only ones that could disable it, that disable their security mechanism. It goes on to say, September 11th has been used by Bush, Rumsfeld, Cheney, and others to launch a phony war on terrorism. Remember, this is not us saying, this is what they say. The war on terrorism requires a steady stream of alleged terrorist actions. And who better to arrange them than the CIA and Rumsfeld's proactive preemptive operations group, or other special forces. You see, so everybody knows, this is their article, and this steady stream of so-called terrorists. Well, a few months ago, we had the poor Pakistani guy. I don't know where they get these people was supposed to blow up Times Square. And you remember, all of these guys are very sophisticated, but they're stupid. Right? The Yemeni guy, so-called Nigerian, so-called, he went to Yemen and got pumped up, and so he put bombing stuff in his underwear. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't care if you're a terrorist or a psycho. You may put it in your head or under your arm, but nobody's going to put, tell the truth, any explosive stuff in their private car. That's just, hey, no. Come on now. Man, it's just something that, this is ridiculous. But if they're, you know how the American people, you went to school with them, they're not very bright. Now, you know that. That's why you have to have patience. You have to have patience. They've been saturated. If you felt, have, if people have grown up on a diet of Cheerios, sugar pops, and bubble gum, right? You don't expect them, their muscles to be strong. So if you, your media has fed you all of the sugar pops and cream puff stuff in the media all your life, you're not, they're not required to make a rational decision. Right? Tell it, they don't have the wherewithal. They just don't know any better. So we have to be patient with these people. I have relatives and friends here. They are stark raving. You know, I tell them stuff years ago. Finally, after 10 or 15 years, they come looking at me like, man, you've been telling us this all the time. I said, yeah, it's just normal stuff that we all know. They look at me like I have a crystal ball. Like, you know what I mean? I say stuff over it and a picture pops up and then I push the button and something else. I said, no. I said, y'all just don't know any better. That's why we have to think logically about the American people. There's one more short article I want to read. This one is called, it's from the same group. It's called Fabricating the Enemy. Fabricating the Enemy. And then I'll get to my short talk. There's no evidence that the Pentagon or the CIA played a direct role in the recent terrorist attacks. The latter one undertaken by organizations or cells of these organizations, which operate quite independently with a certain degree of autonomy. This independence is in the very nature of a covert intelligence operation. The intelligence asset is not in direct contact with its covert sponsors. It is not necessarily cognizant of its role it plays on behalf of the intelligence sponsors. I could give you a perfect example of all of one we know. Years ago, when all the fitna, they had won the war in Afghanistan against the Soviet Union, then the brothers fought each other for a long time. All of a sudden, they brought Taliban out, right? We know Taliban was a creation of Americans, Saudi money, right? ISI, and that's where they came from. Everybody knows that. Taliban is a student. How many students? A student has a problem living, so he has to have four or five people stay in the same apartment just to pay rent. Now imagine you in a camp in Pakistan. Do you have $40 million to buy a tank? Here come the Taliban with brand new tanks. They even had a little air power with them. Weapons, some of the weapons cost $400 or $500 each on the open market, right? Good rifle, $300, easy. Some you can get under the table for $100 or two. Here they come with all brand new rifles, all kind of equipment, all kind of ammunition. You ever buy a box of ammo? You got to have money just to buy one little box. Now here come students. Taliban. Been in a refugee camp in Pakistan for years. Where are they going to get the money to come with an army and get rid of anybody? Well, they came with the army, but this is now the asset itself may not know that it is being used by the CIA. It's very clear with the Taliban had a mission. And when they couldn't carry out their mission, they had to get rid of them. What was their mission? We knew right away that their mission, right, was to start a global fitna, Sunni Shia fitna. Isn't that right? You can see it. They went to Mazar Sharif and killed 5,000 or 6,000 people, just like that. I know some brothers, it was some brothers in the office there, in the Daftar. And it was 12 working on diplomatic personalities from Iran. 12 of them was killed, and 2 of them got away and told a story. Isn't that right? This was back several years ago. The other thing that Taliban was supposed to do was facilitate American plans. Okay, the West wanted to build a gas pipeline. You know, the natural gas with Afghanistan. They said, no, we don't like that. Remember, their intelligence assets, most of the functional people do not technically know they are direct assets of the Western governments. So they failed. The other thing they failed on was they started going around getting rid of opium and heroin production. Well, I don't have to tell you, all U.S. allies are drug dealers, isn't that right? In the old days, a lot of drugs came from Iran, Turkey, Marseille, France, the French connection, they call it, to New York. The other heroin on the West Coast came through not only Mexico, but Southeast Asia. Who was the dope dealers there? The ZM regime, South Vietnam. All, Shaw's wife, somebody in the family was supposed to be the main dope dealer over there, right? All U.S. up to the day. Proof is when the Taliban have their trouble in Afghanistan, heroin production went up, what? 400%. That was the problem. The dumb Taliban could not take orders on what they were supposed to. They failed. Number one, we don't have global Sunni Shia fitna. You were supposed to start a war. And remember, when they killed all of those people, first of all, Iran, the Rahbar sent 235,000 troops to the border. Remember? Maybe 97 and 98. But he pulled back. He said, no, we're not going to do it. We're not going to be trapped. Right? This is good reasoning. And they pulled back. So then, they done failed. They failed on the other point in the pipeline. What do you mean we can't have a pipeline? Then they failed again, not only in the war, but in the drug production. So then the West had to get rid of them. That's why they find an excuse. They said, well, Bin Laden and his friend, Bin Laden was in the hospital and at a CIA hospital when all this stuff was happening, getting his kidneys treated. So he couldn't have nothing to do with it, right? And if he did, he's their man, right? They created all of these problems themselves. But I want to tell you, don't worry about a thing. If you look at all the great fitnas, the one that they were supposed to get rid of with all of the fitna is the one that come out smelling like a rose. And it took them years to realize it. I don't think they realized it until we started making speeches about it. If you look on the map, if you look at the fitna, of course there's some fitna in Pakistan, right? Their fault. They've almost destroyed the country. Afghanistan, right? Iraq, right? Who's right there in the middle? If you was looking at a target, who's right there in the middle of all of that? It's Iran. Look on the map. Everything around it, they started all the trouble, but the only one to benefit it, the old dumb U.S. got rid of Saddam for us? Thank you very much. You should have did it earlier, right? The dumb Taliban, we pulled the 235,000 troops off the border. Alhamdulillah. Right? They go get rid of the dumb Taliban. Right? They neutralized all the people that hated us and didn't like us and wanted to do us harm. They neutralized all of them. And all of a sudden, now you see Iran there as a so-called superpower in the West. I mean, in that area. There was a commentator last week that said on the news, he said, if you were an alien from outer space and you monitored the information back and forth in the world, you would think that there was only two superpowers in the world, or two big powers, Iran and the United States. Isn't that right? Now, who's winning this psychological struggle? Dear believers, every day they come out with a new plot against Iran. The longer it survives, the longer it endures. Iran, I was reading Al Ahram, this is the Egyptian, the English newspaper. And they were saying, look, the president of Iran is our president. He speaks for us. Our people, leaders, don't speak for nobody but themselves. Right? Hey, an American diplomat goes to South America, they throw rocks at him today. When the president of Iran went down there, they threw flowers at him. This is today. The Islamic Republic has more influence and more love than we ever even hoped for. Right? It is because if you do the job the best you can, you don't know these outcomes. Allah will help you from areas you have no idea about. And I'll finish this little article. Okay. So remember, the guys are not cognizant. They don't know that they're stooges all the time. The fundamental question is, who is behind them? Through what source are they being financed? And what is the underlying network ties? This is what the Americans are asking, not us. A recent 2002 classified outbrief drafted to guide the Pentagon's call for the creation of a so-called proactive preemptive operations group to launch secret operations aimed at stimulating reaction amongst terrorists and states possessing weapons of mass destruction, that is, for instance, prodding terrorist cells into action that and exposing themselves to quick response and attacks by U.S. forces. This is for people who are really just against U.S. policy. They do things to provoke them so they'll come out and show where they're coming from, right? And then they can blow them up. That's the good part of the policy. The rest is they initiate most of it. Just one or two more things. The P20 or OG, whatever they call it, initiative is nothing new. It essentially extends the existing apparatus of covert operations. Amply documented, the CIA supported terrorist groups since the Cold War era. This prodding of terrorist cells under covert intelligence operations often requires infiltration and training of the radical groups like Al-Qaeda. This is what they said. Intelligence operations often requires the infiltration of these groups, the training of the groups, and the financing of the groups, right? All right. Covert support by U.S. military intelligence apparatus has been channeled to various Islamic terrorist organizations through a complex network of intermediaries, intelligence proxies. Okay, that's enough of that. Dear believers, what's that saying? What do we do? They're saying that most of the fitna that happens, we know inside of the United States. There was one masjid up in New York, an African-American masjid. One Pakistani brother had got some case and he wanted to stay here in the U.S. And so they said, okay, we want you to infiltrate this masjid and encourage the people to do some terrorist acts. So it was some dummies there. And the imam told him, stay away from this guy, this Pakistani guy. But he kept giving him money. You know our brother sometime, a little mustadhaf, a little poor, and need a little money. So the guy kept pumping him money. And they would have meetings, and he would tell them, we want you to do this. And they said, no, man, we just need some money to help. They was hustling the guy to get money from him. So finally, this is the one of the Jewish synagogue 2 years ago, or a year and a half ago. They drive the guy up to the synagogue, give him a phony bomb, and said, this is the bomb, blow up the synagogue. Then they arrest him. Does this sound similar to all of these recent arrests? It's called entrapment. One of the guys was so out of it, he was on medication, you know, psychological medication like Thorazine or Prozac. And so when they like that, they kind of like this. So the judge had him in court, and they said, the judge was reading the thing, he said, do you know what's going on here? He said, I think so. He was doped up. He don't know the guy. He don't know. He's taking psychological medicine from the government. You know what I mean? To help his mental illness. This is the type of thing that they do all the time. We have become so familiar with it, but instead of complaining about it, we have a little solution, we think. So our literature says this, this period, this year, here are our thoughts. And this says for number one, play a role in the Earth Liberation Movement, which aims to free the Earth from the parasitical behavior of man. Establish a non-predatory system of interconnected global harmony. You like that language, don't you? Interconnected global harmony. Nurture and further a culture of Earth-first custodianship. Understand and respect the rights of the Earth, which should be treated as a living organism. Which it is, and envision and actualize a global redesign for the 21st century. Probably you've reading and you've studied, there's a whole new mentality developing in the world. This is the same mentality that was developing in the 1950s and 1960s. In your countries, it was decolonization. In America, it was civil rights, black nationalism, and all of that. But that was a global mentality that was saying, we're tired of the world the way it is, and we want to be free, and we want to be liberated. There's a global mind developing amongst many thousands of people, and you hear it every day. It is a mind that says, enough is enough. The way the world is running today is finished. It's old, it's out of date, and we need to do a new process. And so there are people who are, we work with people who you call tree huggers, you know, those are environmentalists. Yeah, because we want to see the Chesapeake Bay clean. We want to see clean air, clean water. Well, if you want to clean up the air and the water, do you go to the water and clean it up? No, you go to the man, the human being, is the one. And we use words that are key words to us, but the other people aren't paying attention. Custodial environment. You know, another word for khalifa, like in the Quran, it says, you know, when Adam made these small little problems, and so they dropped him down, and you know what I mean? He said, angels are saying, you're going to create a guy that could shed blood, you know? Musib, Fasad. So then Allah says, I know what you know, but I know what you know not. And this man that he's going to create is a khalifa. Khalifa, generally people take it as a ruler, a supervisor, or a leader. But another word is custodian. Custodian. And that's what the earth needs right now, a custodian that, right? What does a custodian do? It keeps the place clean. So the human being has to have the idea now, not only of my race, my color, my group, or even my religion, but the human being and got so far diverted, he done forgot the whole earth. And this idiot will ruin the whole earth to get a few more dollars, isn't that right? Well, anybody that had any brains would know if you destroy the earth, where you going to live? You can't get but 2-3 people on a rocket ship, there's no place to land. That don't take a million years to get to at light speed, right? So anybody with intelligence would say, hold it, we got to slow down and fix this beautiful earth And you know, all through the Quran is talking about the earth, the environment, all through the Quran. Isn't that right? Just look at it, how it's laid out. Right? How beautiful it is. How, mizan is the word, how much balance it has. We believe that's our mission today. Not only establish ourselves, our way of life, but to take care of this whole environment. And there are people who are thinking exactly like we are. That means global redesign. And the West is thinking about it, but you got to watch it. You go to universities, they're having programs too. And they call global redesign. But they want to redesign it where they keep all the money as usual. They know that the earth cannot operate on the production that it does, the waste. So everybody knows that for this 21st century, it has to be a new process. We right in there. So we say this is what we want to do. Now, what can we do right here in America? As our brother said, thinking you got to start. Our concerns are the whole world. But where do we influence? You have to start. You have an area of concern. Our concern is with the whole earth and all its peoples. Our concern is with Islam and all of its peoples. But our influence, our area of influence, is much smaller. We have to start where we are and do what we can. Now, I'm just going to mention two things. The first thing is the de-Israelization of the Islamic movement in North America. I'll say that again. And I mean not only North America, the de-Israelization of the Islamic movement. You know, for instance, if we have a good institution like COOM, you think the Americans aren't going to send informers over there, right? The Shah did, didn't he? Didn't the Shah have snitches in COOM? Didn't he? The Shah was so slick. The brothers was telling me that years ago, one of the big islands that they had it, that while he was in prison, the doctors operated on him and everything to make it look like he was tortured. Then when he come back, they said, oh, this is a tough brother. This is our brother. Look how well he's taught. He had big bandages and everything, right? But this is an informer, right? For Sabak. We're here in the United States of America. Dear believers, your survivor, this 40th anniversary, MSA, PSG, I think what did you change to Pan-Sira, something or other. That's great. That's good. Still the same thing. But anyway, that's 40 years. I know I say this every year, but you brothers and sisters have already done more than any other movement in United States history. I know the last 10 or 15 years you've been a little quiet and kind of getting the jobs, trying to get a few promotions here and there, but I tell you, our movements, from what we know, Martin Luther King, his big day started at the bus boycott in 1955 and 56 in Birmingham. He was martyred in 1968. It's 12 or 13 years. Malcolm X, his big push was from 1952, 1965, and he's martyred. The Black Panther Party is from the same city. We were friends. We was in exile together, all of that. We're still friends, the old Black Panther Party. They started in my city, big time, in 1966. By 1971, they were defunct. Marcus Garvey, our greatest African-American leader, the Back to the Africa movement. His big push was from about 1917 to 1922. They sent him in exile. And his organization had 3 million people in it. That was 100 years ago. Once he had so much fitna against him that he was contemplating suicide. And he told his best friend about it. And his best friend was Agent 800, the first black agent in what was called then the Bureau of Investigation under J. Edgar Hoover. His best friend 100 years ago was the FBI agent. The property he bought, Steamship Line, Black Star Steamship Line, a federal agent in there had him pay 6 times the value for those ships. And when they bought the ships and put them on the water, federal agents inside of his organization destabilized them, immobilized them. I'm telling you, we know the history of the United States government in detail. For us, it's Allah and knowing your enemy. We have survived. And you, I'm telling you, when I met many of the brothers here, and you know, I used to travel all over the country. The brothers would run me around this country. I mean, I would make whole trips. I'd come to Texas. I'd be in College Station, San Antonio, right up the way here. What's the big college not far from here, university? But anyway, all over Texas. And when I'd get to one place, the brothers would say, oh, the brothers in Louisiana would like for you to come. So I'd go down to Louisiana, to Monroe. And they'd say, oh, the brothers over here would like them. Before I know it, I'd travel all around the country. You know what I'd find? I would find that everywhere the brothers was, and the brothers was working hard. They were going for the Mustadathin. I bet you 80% of the Mustadathin that you were working with, and I told some of the brothers then, were United States government agents. That's why everything failed. And anywhere it was a hard-working brother, like, y'all remember Mahmoud Lafayette? Mahmoud Mugabe. Y'all remember him? Okay. He was really good. And then they opened a masjid in New Orleans. The next thing you know, Mahmoud was on a plane going back home because they were very sensitive. And everywhere I would go, I would say, man, remember, I've already had experience in the gangster world and all the criminal organizations, and I've been in prison with all the big movements and studied. I know what I'm going to do. When I go out, I'm going to be a Muslim. I'm going to try to be a Muslim imam and da-da-da-da-da. So I know what I'm dealing with before I go out. Do you know that most of the people that you have dealt with, most of them was government agents. Most of them. That's why, go back and turn back the clock. Are any of them active right now? Out of all the brothers all over the United States, how many are active? I'm just asking a question. How many are active and doing anything? No, their job was to watch you. Their job was to report on you. Their job was to they were infiltrators, government agents. That's why they always know right who to go through. But you survived all of that longer than anybody else in American history. So you should never feel like, well, I can't do it. No, you can do it. So when we say the de-Israelization of Islamic movement in North America, we mean the de-Israelization of the whole Islamic movement. Why? Because most of the organizations, like right now in America, millions of Muslims, very wealthy. Why is nobody doing any of the things that should be done? Because the leaders are paid and control either the old line Saudi agencies, right? The big organizations here. The people are controlled. And you can go to a masjid and there's 300 or 400 people for Isha prayer, but they don't say anything about anything that's happening in the society. Why? Because the line is controlled and manipulated. So our first goal is to de-Israelize the Islamic movement in North America. The next thing, and it looks like I'm getting long, is the re-Africanization of Islamic movement in North America. This sounds very simple, but here's what does a re-Africanization of Islamic movement mean? It means that years ago, all African-American Islamic organizations were militant. Most of them came out of the Black Nationalist movement. and it started as civil rights. I told you about that time. See, I can tell. I've been doing this so long. I said, brother, it's about that time. So 5 minutes is plenty of time. This is what I want to say. In this process of de-Israelization, it means, and re-Africanization, well, basically, here's what happened. All of our old movements were militant, pretty well organized. So the Americans and Israelis knew what they was going to do to us, so they couldn't put an African-American face on it, because an African-American face is an American face. Right? So when they used to talk about Islam from 15 years on back, it was always a black face on it, wasn't it? Think about it. Okay. Now, all of us have friends and relatives in our neighborhood. They know that Islam is good. It's just too hard for them to say, I can't have a girlfriend. I can't smoke no weed. Man. So that religion is good. I mean, look, you know, they look at me and they say, man, you was a dope dealer. You was doing this. Now you got a school and you helping kids with education. That's really great. But man, I can't snort a little cocaine? Just a little? You know, that's the only thing. I got to fast. I can't eat for a whole month during the day? Oh. I can't go to McDonald's. I can't get a big burger or nothing? No, a little orange juice? So they love Islam, but it's too hard for them. In our neighborhood, the people, you don't see no masjid spray painted. Nobody did anything to us, right? All the masajid are immigrant mosques that are spray painted or burned or anything. None in our neighborhood, because the people like Islam and they like us because they see it as transformational. They see the change. They know it works. They know it's good. And I'm going to speed up. I got maybe 2 more minutes left. So anyway, our idea is to re-Africanize the Islamic movement, not for racism, but to put an African face on Islam that calms the Americans down and make it more difficult for the FBI and for others. And we believe that the immigrant community should do just as the brother said. The immigrant community should continue to build more masajid centers and school and concentrate on being a good person here in America and helping people to understand more about Islam. But it is our job, and when I say our job, it's only a few. Nobody wants to take on this stuff because they know what it entails. So I don't think there's over 2 people that want this job. So I have personally taken a job that nobody really wants. You know, they say, oh, you want that? Here you go. You like to face the U.S. good. Well, that's our job. That's our job. We have to build institutions. If we don't like what's in the media, we have to build a whole new media of our own. If we don't like any of the systems that operate here in the U.S., don't say we can't do it. We have to rise to the occasion. All our people in the past did. Martin Luther King, them, worked against segregation. Malcolm X, them, against oppression. Mahatma Gandhi, Imam Khomeini, all of those great personalities, they rose to the occasion. What they did was classically impossible, isn't that right? But they did it because they rose to occasion. Now, you and I have to rise to the occasion of our time. This is the crux of the matter. And I know my time is about finished, so I'm asking us, those that want to, let's rise to the occasion. So anytime you see me running around with a box, that box is an occasion box. Anything you put in it means that we have to, you have to have staff, right? You have to be organized. All of those things you have to do. Not haphazard anymore. It has to be well organized. The people have to be well trained. And we have to be, call it a systematic, well managed organization. We call it strategic management under conditions of repression. And so we thank you very much. There's one more thing I want to mention. Brother Muhammad Alassi, they're outside on that table. There's a great tafsir of Quran for our time. Now, you know, they didn't have no money to print it and all of that. So, and you know, it's almost outlawed in every classical institution. So we ask all of you to pay very close attention, and if you can, get a set for yourself, get a set for somebody else. All it is getting more money so we can print more of them. That's all it is. It's not a hustle. It's not a money maker. But remember, everything that we want to do, we have to do it. We can't depend on anyone else to do it. They're too well controlled. We thank you very much and for this opportunity. And dear believers, it's an honor and a privilege to see many of you still here. Little gray, little tummies, but that's fine. Hey man, nobody said we're perfect. We're just doing what we can, right? So may Allah bless you, and thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with this system which we call Velayati Faqih.
Allah.